from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Should we have made more effort or taken an easier way out and just said to the taxpayers, you fix the mess that legislatures of the past had created? And I think that's what we're doing here, delivering a punishing tax increase and making the wrong people pay.
I am a product of the state university system, and it offends me that there isn't more urgency in dealing with this situation.
It's not the time to debate who last invited whom to the table. It's time to file that question away permanently. Just come to the table. It is our time for our leaders and our rank and file to meet and negotiate this to completion.
While we might be interested in doing this, we need to see some courage from people who are willing to pull away from the governor of the state of Illinois, discuss the issues he has on his mind, but then do the job we were elected to do in this chamber, to not kowtow to a different branch of government.
Time is running out on the spring legislative session. Tempers are getting a bit short as well. Can a budget deal get done? We saw a budget package move out of the Senate this week, but is it going anywhere else? We'll talk about the budget impasse and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in our State House studios, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, and our State House reporter from the Chicago Tribune, Monique Garcia, joins us today. Monique, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
And Monique and Brian, I'll throw it to you. Let's start with that Democratic budget plan that moved out of the Senate. I call it Democratic because there was no Republican votes on it. What does it involve? Give us the overview of that package.
It involves higher taxes. That's the bottom line there. It raises the state income tax up from its current 3.75% to 4.95%. They didn't really want to go all the way back up to 5, even though most people, independent analysts who've looked at this, say that's, you know, ultimately probably not enough. It probably should be even higher than that. We've seen several reports saying that. It would also expand the state sales tax to cover some services like tattooing, piercing. I think dry cleaning was on that list, although things kept changing up to the last minute with that. And it imposes a tax on satellite television. Those are kind of the main things that it does. Ultimately, it's about raising the state income tax. And the Democrats went it alone. There had been hope ever since these grand bargain negotiations were first revealed at the beginning of the year that Democrats and Republicans could come together to pass this budget bill. But just as we saw a week prior when the Democrats passed the spending plan, they did not have any Republican support.
And it would also cut spending in some areas, too?
That's right. So it calls for an across-the-board 5% cut to most state agencies, except for universities who would have a 10% cut. And so because there are some of these cuts built in, Senate President John Cullerton and Democrats tried to present this as a bipartisan effort. So while the grand bargain seemed to possibly still kind of be on the tracks, there was some negotiation between Republicans and Democrats in the hope that there could be an agreement. So you'll hear Cullerton out there saying, you know, this really is the governor's budget. It's not entirely accurate, but it was initially designed to try to bring the GOP on. But ultimately, at the end of the day, there's still the stumbling block from Republicans in that the governor insists that if he is going to sign an income tax increase, he also wants a property tax freeze. And that is not in this plan as it passed the Senate.
Yeah, and I think the Democrats would say that's what the governor is insisting on this week, this month. Although last year at this time, when he was talking about a budget, it was term limits and redistricting changes that he wanted to see. So the Democrats say, you know, it seems like the governor always has just one more thing that he wants to, that is his must have. And the governor's people say, well, the governor's never really had one specific priority or prerequisite for the budget. But at least for this week, It's a property tax freeze. And we saw from polling this week that that is something that is very popular with voters. The conservative activist group, the Illinois Policy Institute, put out a poll that suggests that voters really want to see a property tax freeze. Not particularly surprising.
Well, I know a lot
and the
of
governor.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of people
at a press conference.
Go ahead, Monique. Go ahead.
I was going to say the governor right now left Springfield to have a press conference at the home of a suburban homeowner to talk about this issue. So this is something that he is holding on to dearly in these last couple days to say, you know, look, I'm really trying to cut a deal for you here. But Democrats, as Brian mentioned, say that he continues to move the ball and move the goalpost.
Well, I know that the property tax freeze is not part of this package, yet it had been discussed before during those grand bargain negotiations. Of course, a lot of people are saying this Senate plan's not really going anywhere. It may not, ever get out of the House even. Why didn't Senate Democrats add something like that into this package, especially if it is just, trying to break this logjam a bit? Why didn't they put at least some type of tax freeze for property taxes in it?
Well, they did put one on the board a week ago, and it failed to get enough votes. Because of the way it was structured, it would preempt home rule, and so I think I'm saying that right. It would, Charlie, I'm sure, will correct me on this, but it required a higher vote threshold to get out of the Senate, and it didn't have the votes. And the Democrats say, look, we don't want a property tax freeze. We think this is bad policy. If the Republicans aren't even going to vote for this, well, then we're not going to bend over backwards to make it happen. We put it on the board. The Republicans didn't want to support it. They said it wasn't good enough. What the Senate Republicans have said is for every year of a tax increase, there should be a year of a property tax freeze. So nobody really suggested only doing a two-year tax increase. That would not solve our state's budget problems. But there had been some discussion, I guess, of a four-year tax increase in exchange for a four-year property tax freeze. The sides just couldn't come together on that.
Right. Though. I mean, it raised concerns for Democrats to kind of build in this cliff by letting the tax increase expire in a few years. We saw that happen as Governor Rauner took office. He campaigned on letting that higher tax rate roll back, and that caused an immediate $4 billion to $5 billion dollar hole in our budget, which we continue to grapple with in the midst of this impasse. And so Democrats didn't want to just do a temporary income tax increase. And they also noted that property tax freezes really could hamper local governments and school districts who rely on that money for day-to-day operations, for even paying pensions of fire and police officers.
Yeah, and the whole notion of a property tax freeze sounds popular to the average citizen, but I'm not sure what actually would result from putting through the legislation that's been introduced by the governor's allies. I'm not sure how that would actually translate in real-world terms. And the reason I say that is right now we have a law that says in the collar counties and Cook County, with the exception of home rule units, and in roughly one-third of the downstate counties, a local government can only ask for an increase in its levy, the amount of money it wants collected from property taxes. It can only increase by the rate of inflation or 5%. Well, we haven't had 5% rate of inflation for decades, so it's basically the rate of inflation, and inflation has been relatively low. If they want to ask for more, they have to go to referendum. And so the legislation that's pending, the freeze, would change that rate of inflation increase to 0%. So a local government couldn't ask for more money from one year to the next. That doesn't mean that I, as a property owner, may not have to pay more property taxes. It depends on the relative value of my property compared to others in the taxing body. So it's conceivable some people's property taxes would go up. And it's also,
I don't think people under... Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to say another point. If you look at it, it's this notion, well, I'm going to have to pay more in income taxes, but somehow I'm going to get a break on my property taxes. Well, in the real world, someone who is retired would get a break and not have to pay any more in income taxes because we don't tax retirement income. On the other hand, someone who is a renter will have to pay more income taxes, but I'm pretty sure most landlords, should there be any break on property taxes, aren't going to reduce their rents. So it's more complicated than just, oh, yeah, if I have to pay more income taxes, well, I'll pay less in property taxes. But it's the kind of thing that if you're trying to put across a political message, it's good propaganda. People like it. You don't have to explain the details. I've probably taken, 3 minutes to talk about the details. Well, you're not going to do that in a 60 or in a 30-second commercial. It's like, I want to freeze your property taxes. And that's where the governor is.
Indeed, he has created a one-word phrase for this, and that is parity. That's the word that he continues to use over and over and over again in these negotiations and saying, I am trying to create parity for taxpayers by insisting on this property tax relief.
Let's talk about this Senate plan just a little bit more. And you can give me the Cliff's Notes versions of this, but a couple of questions I had. Is it balanced? The Democrats have said it's balanced. Is it?
The short answer is not exactly. And so Representative Greg Harris in the House has started to really kind of pull this bill apart as the attention kind of focuses on what they're going to do in the House. And he notes that much of the proposed cuts in this bill, almost up to $2 billion, rely on savings from a pension overhaul that has yet to become law and is likely to be challenged in court, as well as savings from a new contract with AFSCME, which, as we all know, is also in the courts right now in a battle with the Rauner administration. So that's about a $2 billion hole right there alone. There's also concerns that perhaps in the Senate plan there is not – earlier a few weeks ago, they had passed a plan to borrow to try to pay down the bills. They looked at about a $7 billion borrowing on a $14 billion tab. But they don't include a revenue stream in this budget package to pay down that borrowing. So there's not even that kind of money to pay for that, if that's really the way they wanted to proceed as well. So there are a lot of questions about the math and the numbers and, you know, what that would ultimately mean in terms of the ledger.
I think the Senate Democrats would dispute that a little bit. My reporting has shown is that they're not counting all of the pension savings, right? Like, there's this consideration model is one aspect. That's the sort of big change that would force state employees and university employees, like all of us on this panel, except for Monique, who are members of the university retirement system, would have a choice. You can either have your any future pay raises count towards your pension, or, you know, if you want your pay raises to count, then you have to give up the automatic annuity adjustment, the automatic 3% increase after you retire. That aspect is, everybody knows that's going to be challenged in court if it ever becomes law. And the Democrats say they're not counting that aspect of savings. They are counting some other sort of pension savings. But yes, they do acknowledge that they're looking at the potential savings from state employee health insurance, which is commonly referred to as the AFSCME contract. That's tied up in court. That's going to be in court. It's expected to be in court for a very long time. And, you know, what the Democrats will say is, look, the governor proposed those savings in his budget address and in all his budget proposals, too. So we're just doing the same thing. But they will privately acknowledge that, yes, it's not balanced, but this is a starting point. Somebody had to do something, they say. And so that's why they passed it over to the House to keep the ball rolling.
So it now moves over to the House, as you mentioned. Greg Harris starting to pick this apart. I had read where Greg Harris is saying he wants to have possibly some public hearings, and not just legislative hearings at the Capitol, maybe, but possibly hearings elsewhere. There's no time for that, I would think. Does this mean that they're not going to either be able to consider this by the end of the session, or we just won't have a budget, or do we have any idea really where we're going next?
Well, I do know that Sunday the House plans to come back in the afternoon to have public hearings on the Senate plan. Several appropriations committees are going to have subject matter hearings to really kind of get into the nitty-gritty of this. And then on Monday, that same bill that they're supposed to be hearing is in another committee. So it's very likely that what we may see is that, you know, the House tears apart this thing, says, we like some parts of it, we don't like some parts of it, and puts their kind of version of a budget up for a vote next week. But it's also worth noting, yes, the time, of course, we are facing the May 31st deadline when the threshold to pass these things goes up and requires more votes. But, you know, history is kind of our lesson here, where last year we saw ultimately that Democrats in both chambers could not agree on a plan and did not get anything to the governor. And so we saw them go into overtime. And that is when we had another 6-month temporary spending plan.
Charlie,
and it's not.
Go ahead, Brian.
I was saying it's not just. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking at the May 31st deadline. That has traditionally been, in a normal year, which we haven't been in a normal political climate for more than 2 years now. In a normal year, that's when a lot of the attention would be. But a lot of observers are thinking this is, or pretty much expecting this to go beyond that. Fitch, one of the credit rating agencies this week, put out a report that said May 31st, not the deadline for Illinois' budget. So I think a lot of people are wondering, will the rating agencies pounce on June 1st with a credit downgrade? And Fitch, at least, has signaled that they're waiting until really the end of the fiscal year.
But Fitch notes that, you know, this deadline is almost kind of an artificial deadline because the real issue is not the legislative calendar, but it's this political impasse between the parties and their just reluctance to really come to an agreement.
And as State Representative Lou Lang, who we heard from at the top of the show, he even disputes, you know, the use of the word impasse. He says this is a crisis. You know, an impasse is when you want to talk about the budget and you have, okay, you want to spend this much on this prison. We don't want to think we need to spend that. We should spend a little more at the college here, or this, that, and the other thing. He says, you know, this is about the fact that, you know, the governor wants, he has an economic and political agenda that he says is critical to the future of the economic health of the state, and he thinks that needs to be done first as a prerequisite before we get to the budget. And so that's, you know, we've been saying this for years now, but that's still the main stumbling block. It's not actually necessarily about questions of state spending or state taxation, really. It's about this question of, you know, how much of the governor's political and economic agenda should be passed in conjunction with trying to balance the state budget.
And we are quickly, if not already, approaching the gubernatorial election. And Democrats are, at this point, reluctant to give the governor a win. They say, at this point, you know, we understand that things are in crisis, but why would we go ahead and resolve this when we could hammer him with ads that say, look, he's the only governor in state history who's never had a budget.
And Monique, that's a good point. On the flip side of that, Charlie, do you think Democrats have to pass something this week before they leave town? I mean, politically, it's not going to look good especially if the Senate's able to pass something, if the House doesn't, you know, respond in some way.
I think it would provide further ammunition for Rauner's mantra that it's all Mike Madigan's fault. But as a practical matter, as was said earlier, the real deadline is the start of the fiscal year, which is July 1st. Now, after the end of May, in June, it requires extraordinary votes. Well, if you have an agreement, getting the extra votes won't be a problem because there will be Republicans and Democrats who vote for it in sufficient numbers that it will pass. If you don't have an agreement and the Democrats go it on their own, Rauner will veto it, with the exception of money to fund K-12 education, go back to the legislature where the Democrats don't have the votes to override. So it's a tricky situation, and I think it's probably, and I guess I'm being woefully optimistic, but I would hope that there would be some agreement reached to fund state government and set aside these non-budget issues, and particularly property taxes. That's not even a state issue. That's a local issue. Not one cent of property tax money goes to the state of Illinois.
You said July 1st, the start of the fiscal year, is really the pending deadline that they need to be looking
at. Yeah, that's
what
the rating agency said.
But also, couldn't you make an argument that it could even be later than that as we get a little closer to most schools starting? That becomes the real deadline?
And I would argue that July 1st is not even – what on June 30th, a court order exists to pay state employees. There's no appropriation to pay state employees, and that court order will still be in effect July 1st.
Right.
Most state agencies do not have appropriations as we sit here today at the end of May, and they're not going to have them June 30th, and they're not going to have them July 1st. Not much will actually change in the real world in terms of what the state is authorized to spend. Now, there's a court case we can talk about a little bit later. There's a couple of court cases out there that if those were to go a certain way, could conceivably shake things up by just drastically changing who has permission to spend money right now and what money is going out the door without an appropriation. And that would shift power back to the legislature to kind of dictate the terms of any resolution here. But right now, I don't actually think much changes between June 30th and July 1st. You know, and maybe these outside influences, people will scream louder, rating agencies will maybe downgrade the state debt to junk bond status. But in terms of practically what would change, not much from one day to the next.
And Sean, you noted what has historically been the big pressure point in the last couple years, which is getting funding out the door for K through 12 education. So far, there has been a general agreement among the parties that that is kind of the chaos that they don't want to enter into. They want to make sure that kids can go to school and that parents can go to work. But there are some camps that wonder, if we let that go, if we decide not to fund that, will that put enough pressure on both sides to really cut a comprehensive deal? The question is whether or not anybody's really willing to walk up to that cliff.
And Charlie, go ahead.
I think what's really needed is for rank-and-file legislators, particularly on the Republican side, to stand up for their districts and tell the governor, yeah, we like all that money you're going to give us, but when push comes to shove, I really have to vote for my district. And so let's do some negotiations. Let's see what we can live with in terms of the budget, in terms of taxes and cuts. And let's save term limits for another day, because they have absolutely zero to do with putting a budget together for FY18.
Now, that tax increase, the income tax increase we talked about in the Senate plan, for example, that would be retroactive to January 1. Is that correct?
The way the bill is written now, yeah.
Which really makes that even a more difficult thing, I would think, to get through. I mean, that's going to take quite a chunk out of people's checks.
Yeah, but you could change it to
sure, you could change it. But.
And a way to do it would be to spread out the attempt to bring down the bill backlog. I think when we were talking earlier about a balanced budget, it occurred to me if someone means balanced budget in the sense that at the end of the fiscal year we'll have money in the bank and no bill backlog, I don't think that's possible, because the backlog now is pushing $15 billion, and the revenue estimates for next year are maybe $31 billion, $32 billion. So roughly half the new money coming in has got to pay for the old bills, and you have all this autopilot spending. I just don't see a way, unless you go out and amortize the debt by borrowing. And if we get junk bond status, the interest rates will be quite high. Right now, they're about twice as high as a state that would be selling bonds with a AAA rating. And at some point, if you're junk bond status, some investors, like pension funds, certain pension funds aren't allowed to buy municipal bonds that are rated junk.
And Monique, you talked about this earlier, the possibility of doing something with that backlog of bills, trying to maybe amortize the debt. Why hasn't that been done yet? Do we have any idea? Seems like it's a no-brainer.
Some people would say that, but you need a revenue stream to pay down this debt. And they don't really have an answer on how to do that. But, you know, this gets to the heart of the very difficult questions that lawmakers in both parties are weighing, particularly Democrats who are now pressured with, you know, in the House of following through on a possible tax increase. There are many in that camp who say that if I'm going to vote for something that could be political suicide, I want to make sure it's going to fix the problem. And the rate that passed the Senate for some people doesn't do that. Greg Harris has noted that the House has been meeting privately for several months and developing kind of a principled set of plans and how they want to approach things. And part of that includes getting down that backlog of bills. But the question is, how high do you go? And where does that money come from?
And I don't know what the answer is in terms of what I'm about to say, but I mean, is a 4.9 5% income tax rate really that much better to the voter than a 5.2 or a 5.3% income tax rate? Does the voter really care, or do they just care? I mean, if you're the type of voter who is going to be really ticked off that they raised your tax rates, you're probably going to be ticked off whether it's 4.95 or 5.2. Yet that little difference, it sounds like a very small number, but that's hundreds of millions of dollars per year. And, you know, meanwhile, we're facing this $14 billion bill backlog. That could make a huge difference. And so, I mean, to the point Monique was just making, if we're going to, you know, bite the bullet and really take this very difficult vote, let's make sure we're, you know, doing a real change and not something that's just going to come back and we have to take another difficult vote just a few more years down the line.
Well, it struck me that the reason that it's not five is because the governor has made that another one of his political points, that he won't support five. At one point, wasn't the increase to 4.99?
Yes, it was, and Senate Republicans have been very honest that the governor has drawn a line in the sand with that. And Senator Toy Hutchinson, who carried this revenue bill in the Senate, kind of made fun of it and said nobody wants to go back to what the governor billed as the quincum tax, which was under Governor Pat Quinn. So Rauner has already kind of has this, you know, narrative that he's built around that tax, and he refuses to go above that level.
Well, here's a question, and we've got about a minute and a half or so here before we wrap up. But why did the Senate – I mean, you're putting yourself out there, those senators, by voting for this tax increase, and it may not even go anywhere at this point. So wasn't that kind of risky politically?
They say yes, but it's worth it. There are rank and file who are very, very frustrated by a lack of action among their party. When this impasse or this standoff started, there was a lot of thought that Democrats would line up behind their leaders and eventually, you know, their experience would outmaneuver the governor and the governor would give in. And that simply has not happened. And there are real anger in these districts, particularly where there are universities or that rely on social services who have gone without funding. And they said, we have to be the bigger chamber. We are the upper chamber. We must take this vote and demonstrate to our House colleagues that they can do this.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense is that not all the Democrats in the Senate voted for that bill. People who were in more marginal, so to speak, districts and not safe Democratic districts tended to vote against it, didn't they?
Yes, and that's by design. The Senate,
oh, sure.
You know, there are some seats who are safer than others. So they did have, you know, a very kind of structured roll call from their perspective in terms of who can take this vote and possibly weather some kind of challenge and who should back off.
All right, time for our notes from the field. Monique, let's start with you.
Sure. Well, I'd like to note a last-minute push by a Springfield developer to bring a casino to town. So you'll probably remember that when the Senate was still attempting this grand bargain, part of it included a big gambling package that called for six new casinos, including one in Chicago. Well, folks in Springfield want to get in on that action. There is questions, though, on whether or not this effort comes too late. The bill has already passed, and sponsors are a little reluctant to go back in and start tinkering.
Brian, let's go to you.
Yeah, there's an interesting court case to watch. We're looking for a decision possibly Tuesday of this coming week. Federal judge in Chicago who has mandated a lot of the state's Medicaid spending, that's our health care program for the poor, elderly, and disabled, is reconsidering that decision to possibly say that payment. While it's been authorized, it's taking a very long time. The companies that provide those services are saying they need that money sooner than it's taking the state to pay. This could really upend how the state spends its money, and it could conceivably crowd out other spending, like for state employee paychecks. A real possibility, if this decision goes a certain way, to upend the calculus that's kept state government kind of on autopilot for the last 2 years.
All right, that will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Monique Garcia. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us at NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.